Ms. Varner.
Good morning. Sarah Varner for Stephanie Dinelli. May it please the court. Substance abuse and mental illness are a common combination. Half of the prison and jail population currently reports suffering from mental illness, and of those persons, 75% also report a substance abuse problem. In this case, Mrs. Dinelli's record clearly showed both. The district court addressed and credited the substance abuse argument and ignored the mental illness. Mrs. Dinelli's diagnosis of bipolar disorder was both supported by the record and explicitly argued at the time of her sentencing. That argument can not be said to be so weak that it could be ignored by the district court.
Well, as I view this, Ms. Varner, the problem in essence is, what does it take in a sentencing proceeding to trigger what I'll call the Cunningham responsibility to respond? And was there any written sentencing memorandum filed by the defense in this case?
There was not.
And so what we've got is this, and in defendant's own allocution, she veered completely away from the mental illness issue and said her problem was addiction, right? And then, so what we've got is the attorney's statement, well, this isn't an excuse, but it may be part of an explanation.
Correct.
And I guess the problem I have is that doesn't necessarily look like a, quote, principal argument in mitigation when it's framed that way and presented almost in passing.
2 points to address there. The first is, Mrs. Dinelli did address her addiction during her allocution statement, kind of at the leading of the district court judge to explore that topic. And I think it would be unfair to expect a defendant who's suffering from a serious mental illness to attribute her behavior to that illness when part of that illness is...
I agree. I'm not saying that her response was a waiver of any kind. But I'm trying to understand this from the district judge's standpoint. Who's waving what flags that she needs to respond to?
I think specifically when trial court counsel was addressing the 3553 factors and making the argument to the court on what she should consider, he specifically said, in this case, we had an undiagnosed mental illness combined with a substance abuse problem. And I don't think he could have been more explicit in that regard that was a principal argument. And again, he didn't say that would cause her behavior, but that it was explaining. It was a factor that should be considered under 3553 as the characteristics of the defendant during this time period, 2007 to 2012, was when she was suffering both addiction and undiagnosed mental illness. She was not diagnosed with her bipolar disorder until May of 2012, at the same time that she was facing the federal charges. So I think... this court recently decided Castaldi, which was a case where the Cunningham principle, I believe, was maybe altered a little bit, or at least in that case this court said,
I hope not.
In this case, we have enough of a momentum on the record to show from the beginning of the hearing that this argument was considered. It was mentioned when the court was reviewing the arguments at the beginning of the sentence. The court was paying close attention during the defense argument and engaging in a conversation. The government emphasized the argument during their argument. And at the close of the hearing, when stating the sentence, the judge said, I'm taking all the mitigation arguments into account. And in this case, we don't have nearly the same record.
Nor anything remotely approaching the presentation of the mitigation argument that was at issue in Castaldi. Let me ask you, if I could, counsel, at the end of the sentencing hearing, after Judge Barker gave her explanations, she asked counsel, do you have any legal objection to the sentence, or do you request any further elaboration of my reasons? He restated his objection about the upward departure, but did not ask for any further elaboration of reasons. Why shouldn't we treat that as a waiver?
I think at that point when he had already presented his argument to the district court, he wouldn't then be required to object again to the ruling. made on the basis of that argument.
This is no. This is an entirely different argument. He stated his objection to the upward departure. What you're raising is a procedural objection that the district judge failed to provide a sufficient explanation. The judge gave an explanation, asked counsel on the spot, is that good enough? Do you want more? And he, in essence, said no. Why isn't that a waiver?
I don't believe that the argument was waived when trial counsel directly addressed during the sentencing hearing that argument and asked the district court to consider it under 3553. And again, at the end of the sentencing hearing, the district court judge did recommend mental health treatment for the defendant.
I'm not sure I'm getting through. I'm not suggesting that the mental health issue was, quote, waived. The specific argument you've raised on appeal is a procedural error in failing to explain the sentence sufficiently because the judge didn't specifically address the mental health diagnosis. And since the judge asked, do you want any further elaboration of my reasons? And counsel, in effect, said no. Why is that not a waiver of this procedural issue?
I think the best answer that I could give the court is that when he did state his objection to an above-guideline sentence, that procedural error was a portion of that above-guideline sentence. That procedural error resulted in the above-guideline sentence she ultimately received. And under this court's holding in Castaldi, the judge just really didn't do what this court is requiring at the end of the hearing to wrap up this sentence, to say these are the reasons under 3553, which I'm required to consider, that this sentence is a good sentence for Mrs. Dinelli. Even if we consider that the court would be willing to accept a rote statement from the judge saying, I've considered the mitigation factors presented in this case, even that isn't present in this case.
We know that's not enough, but the look, this is an ongoing problem. As the majority opinion said in Castaldi, this is coming up all the time. And I'm interested in trying to find some reasonable signposts that district judges can follow to know when they've done enough. And one of the things that some opinions suggest doing is exactly what Judge Barker did here. Ask at the end, is there anything I've failed to address? Do you need further elaboration of my reasons? And counsel said no.
I think that a more well-reasoned principle to guide the district court would be at least the requirement of the statement at the end of the sentencing hearing to say, I've considered the party's arguments in mitigation of the sentence. And we just don't even have that on the record here. And there weren't a lot of arguments made on Mrs. Dinelli's behalf. And I believe easily from the record we see that the principal arguments were substance abuse and mental health. And if there are no further questions, I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel. Ms. Pryor.
Good morning. May it please the court. The government would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. At the end of the hearing, Judge Hamilton, the district court, did ask defense counsel if there was additional reasons needed. In Castaldi, the question was asked, what line or is there a line that needs to be drawn as to when there is enough to overcome this procedural hurdle of Cunningham? I think that when reviewing the totality of the record, it's clear that the district court properly calculated the guidelines range, appropriately analyzed the 3553A factors, assessed the facts, and sufficiently explained the sentence. When taken into context, I think it's interesting that the sentencing transcript shows that the district court actually considered all of the mitigation arguments raised by the defense, including the addiction, her mental health status, and her childhood. All of those arguments were raised by defense, even if in passing. during the defendant's statement of allocution, the judge specifically asked, was there something that caused her to commit these crimes? And the defendant stated, no, it was her addiction that drove her to commit these crimes. This representation to the court by the defense is supported in the pre-sentence report that commented on Dinelli's mental health condition. I think it's important to note that in the stipulated facts signed and agreed to by the government as well as the defense, the actual commitment of the crimes occurred between 2007 and June of 2011, June 22nd, actually, of 2011. The diagnosis of bipolar disorder was not diagnosed until May 7th of 2012, outside the scope of the conduct for which Ms. Dinelli was pleading to.
This is over 500 times, is that right?
Your Honor, it was 569 times.
569 times she managed to get money from this elderly couple.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And use other people even to vouch for the fact that her daughter has all this serious stuff and may be getting this huge settlement when it wasn't even a fact.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, when you talk about mitigating, there's some aggravating things. Someone do something once in a while versus over 500 times seems to me to put it on a higher plateau, frankly. So I'm just looking at this as, you know, you have bipolar and other things that may be a factor, but it was certainly, I guess, sufficiently organized and cunning and whatever you want to call it to get those folks to give her that much money and then lose it all.
Yes, Your Honor. The district court actually explained that this behavior was so egregious that it outweighed any of those mitigating factors. The guidelines, the district court felt, that didn't incorporate all of those just facts of the time frame of the offense being over 4 years, the fact that she preyed on elderly victims, and this was not her first time preying on elderly victims in this way, the fact that it left these particular victims financially destitute and in an emotional state, and the amount of the loss of the victims was staggering, that the district court found that this $442,000, almost $500,000 that was lost because of this scheme to this particular defendant. I think all of those factors weighed in the district court's decision and was considered. And these reasons highlighted why the defendant's criminal history and her choice to prey on elderly victims, the extent of the harm, and outweighed those mitigation factors of her addiction, her childhood, and her mental health. Even though the defendant disagrees with the district court's conclusion, I believe it's clear from the record that the court adequately considered the defendant's mental illness and explained why it nonetheless imposed a sentence slightly above that advisory range. The court reasoned that a sentence outside the guidelines was substantially reasonable because the guidelines failed to fairly, reasonably, and capture the cumulative effect of all of these elements.
Statutory maximum here was 20 years?
Yes, Your Honor.
And this defendant had a fairly long history of fraudulent schemes. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. In particular, preying on elderly victims.
This was, in essence, a way of life?
Yes, it was. In closing, Your Honor, if the court has no further questions, the government maintains that because the district court adequately explained its rationale for the chosen sentence, and because the sentence is fairly grounded in 3553A factors, that the lower court's judgment should be affirmed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Varner?
This court must have before it a record that enables it to meaningfully review the district court's actions. What we have in this case is a serious mental health diagnosis. The court is free to assign weight to the factors. I believe that the district court did reference breathtaking factors in that case. And as Your Honor was pointing out, the number of transactions, the amount of money that was stolen. But part of that mental health diagnosis, as stated by counsel at the sentencing hearing, is, I believe he termed it as a tendency to spend lots of money. And in the DSM, as pointed out in the brief, one of the factors of bipolar disorder is excessive involvement in activities with a high potential for painful consequences. And I believe that's exactly the record that this court has before it.
Is the mental illness diagnosis here a mitigating factor or an aggravating factor?
I believe it's a mitigating factor in
Why?
This case. Because it, as counsel stated at the sentencing hearing, it's not the cause of her behavior. It's just, it's an explanation for it. It should mitigate
If a district judge looks at this from the perspective of trying to protect the public, why wouldn't it be reasonable to treat this as an aggravating factor?
I suppose that could be the case, but that's not how the district court, we don't know how the district court viewed this factor, and I think that's the exact problem in this case. Maybe it could be viewed in any number of ways, but what we just don't have, even under the standard set forth in Castaldi, is an indication that the district court did consider the mental illness. And I see that my time has expired. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Davis against Foster.